In the book of Proverbs, when the writer wants to teach us about diligence, he admonishes us with good reason to go to the ant. This evening, our institute topic is part of a pair related not to diligence, but to teamwork. And so instead of saying go to the ant, maybe I could give this pair of topics an umbrella title for tonight and Thursday evening, titled Go to the Donkeys. So I'll put that title here at the top. I've had a poem in my possession for a long time, and this poem contains six stanzas about two donkeys. And when I first saw it, it was published with six little illustrations, and there was one illustration for each verse. And some of you may have seen that poem and even the illustrations. And those illustrations are of donkeys who at first were having trouble with teamwork, and then they learned to cooperate. In fact, the poem's title is Cooperation. I had my one daughter who likes artwork to redo the pictures in larger size so I could use them here this evening. So I'm going to begin the teamwork topic this evening, and you know, teamwork takes cooperation, by presenting this poem, Cooperation. Two donkeys, so the story goes, were tethered each to each. When lo, they neared two shocks of hay that seemed within their reach. Each sought his own. The rope grew taut, as if each would apply his utmost strength to take his share, or know the reason why. They pulled and scraped and pawed and kicked, as if indeed insane. But not by foolish stunts could they one single bite obtain, till, weary, turning face to face, they talked the matter o'er, and mutually agreed that they would thus behave no more. At peace, they soon one shot devoured, and ate the other too. How good their joint refreshment seemed, none but those donkeys knew. Ye humans, crude and stubborn willed, respect the common tether. Be wise, confer, agree, co-work, and eat your hay together. Go to the donkeys. So this evening we're going to think about teamwork, but we're going to look at some of the pulling and scraping and pawing and kicking that go along with the undermining aspect. And then I guess Thursday we'll look at the better side of the topic on how we should eat our hay together. Now, Brother Nolan's already somewhat introduced the idea of teamwork. Probably some of you have heard the acrostic for team: together, each achieves more. And indeed, together, each did achieve more. Teamwork is, perhaps we could say, the beauty of bees in a hive, or the beauty of a carpenter crew putting up a pole barn in a day, or a newspaper team collecting late-breaking news and making things hum to get the papers on the street in time. It's also supposed to be the beauty of Christian day school faculty and board members and parents providing year after year of a good quality Christian educational program. And that's our special interest tonight, isn't it? In getting the teamwork topic here. I don't know that I'll say it more than once, but I guess maybe the kernel idea to remember tonight could be what I'll say next, that it is of superlative importance that kingdom energy go into united effort rather than wasting our time at opposite ends of the same rope. And yet probably some of us could give illustrations from our own church circles in which we do that. We waste our time at opposite ends of the same rope. There's a story told of a visitor that was touring the grounds in the building of a mental hospital. And he was taken especially into a ward where the most dangerous cases were placed. And he was surprised. He saw only two or three guards that were over approximately 100 men. And he gasped and said, "Aren't you afraid that these people will overpower the guards and escape?" And his guide replied, "No, lunatics never unite." Then we'd better, right? With that echoing in our minds, we'll probably all be interested in uniting, won't we? Lunatics never unite. Well, as I said, we're going to talk about the undermining part tonight. I don't know if any of you, I know some of you have your roots in the East, but I don't know how many of you have ever been to the Numidia Bible School in East Central Pennsylvania. Depending on how you went there or when you went there, you might have traveled through the little town of Centralia, which is in the Anthracite Coal Belt of Pennsylvania, and there's an underground fire going in that coal mine, in that coal belt. It's been going for decades. I don't know how it got started. Maybe some of you could tell me. But evidently it has an unstoppable supply of oxygen, and they have never been able to extinguish it. And it keeps burning away this valuable, limited supply, hard coal. And eventually it got near enough to the town of Centralia that it began burning underneath the town. And as a young man traveling to or from Numidia, I remember seeing smoke coming out of the ground from that fire, and people began to board up their houses and move out, as the fire beneath them made living in Centralia unsafe. Fire in a mine under them was undermining them. And this evening, I would like to be thinking about what we can do below the surface of our neighbors' lives that causes the base of teamwork with them to collapse. It might even cause them to, so to speak, board up and move out. Or to continue our metaphor from the opening poem, it causes people to pull and scrape and paw and kick on opposite ends of the same rope instead of eating their hay together. So I'd like to next consider some things about ourselves that can undermine teamwork. And this part of the topic this evening, it does not specifically tie into school teachers. It is about school teachers, but it's for everybody wherever he needs to join a team. And we're going to think about what we do sometimes, or what we are sometimes, that undermines teamwork. Please don't think I'm talking to you. I'm talking with you. Because I'm not going to identify which, but numerous of things that I am saying tonight come from my life as I've struggled with this thing. First of all, one thing that is all too often true of us is that each of us thinks we know. Each of us thinks he knows what is for his own good. We think we do. What I want is right over there. That shock of hay. Why is that person trying to go a different direction from me? I want to eat, and I want to eat that. So each one of us, as a donkey, seeks his own that he knows is for his best, in quotes, and the rope grows taut. And we forget or we ignore the idea of interdependence. And our culture encourages that. It encourages us to be independent instead of interdependent. The day of farmer helping farmer is either extinct or fast vanishing because we each buy our own equipment and go our own way and seek our own schedule. And not just in farming, but numerous cases, that's what our culture encourages. Do your own thing. But we are above the level of donkeys, and so there is a very fulfilling reward that comes to you and me when we know that when I had trouble, He helped me. And sometimes I am able to fill in for Him. That's so different from thinking that each of us knows what we need and can solve it ourselves. Secondly, another thing that is true of us sometimes that undermines teamwork, we tend to have a singular viewpoint. I have a thought through. I know what I'm talking about. It only makes sense to go in this direction. Or, I don't know why I think this way, but that's how I feel about it, and I don't really care to change. We may not always say it that bluntly, but we act it out. Well, in how many different ways is this donkey looking? One. How aware is he of what the other donkey is seeing? Not at all. It's hard to believe that he's seeing much out of the corner of his eye or the back of his head. He is singular in viewpoint. Have you ever read this little prayer? Lord, keep me from becoming talkative and possessed with the idea that I must express myself on every subject. Release me from the craving to straighten out everyone's affairs. Teach me the glorious lesson that occasionally I may be wrong. Make me helpful but not bossy. With my vast store of wisdom and experience, it does seem a pity not to use it all. But thou knowest, Lord, that I want a few friends at the end. Amen. Does that kind of prayer get heard? Begins well, doesn't it? But at the end, it appears that the praying person still cared most about himself and his viewpoint. I just wish it could tell him the way it really is. And egocentrism does invade our churches. Am I humble enough, or are each of you humble enough to admit that egocentrism invades the church through me sometimes? We can be so blind to ourselves that we appear ridiculous. I have a cartoon in my file at home. The file is a dealing with people file, and it shows three men sitting around a table at a meeting. And I think it's the chairman at the end of the table that's speaking, and he has a rather, this is how I look at it, type of look on his face. And what he is saying is this: look, let's just get egos out of this and do it my way. And the face of one of the other men around the table has an expression that seems to be saying, can it be, you dunce? Aren't you thinking about how this sounds? We appear ridiculous to other people when we engage in egocentrism. I in the middle, I most important. Thirdly, we undermine teamwork when we concentrate frequently on other people's failures, other people's weaknesses, instead of what each one is doing right and what each one does understand. You know, we tend to think about the other person's lack of tact, or the other person's being spoiled because he's from a well-to-do family, or this or that, or whatever it is. And I don't know, maybe you don't, but that's my tendency to do too much of that instead of thinking about how beneficial this person has been in this area or that. We say or think such things. But really, how different is one of these donkeys up here from the other? If I see long ears on a donkey, isn't it possible he sees long ears on me? Or whatever characteristic you want to put in there instead of ears. I think the long ears on a donkey make him cute. But put in whatever you want to, a lump or too short of a tail or whatever. Isn't it possible that if I see a quirk in another person that he's seeing quirks in me? Of course it is possible. But we concentrate on others' weaknesses and failures instead of what he does understand and do rightly. Related maybe to that, fourthly, we tend to factionalize, group up, bunch up in little parties around secondary issues. Or maybe they're even farther down than secondary. Teachers will have different opinions on teaching technique and on classroom control. and on curriculum. And we might say things like, well, he thinks penmanship should influence the scores of other grades. And I don't think so. I think penmanship scores should stay on penmanship. And we try to seek supporters for the way we think and hope that they do agree with us and not the other. And, well, what if the two donkeys had quibbled about whether the weave of the rope that tethered them was the strongest construction for a rope? Would it have been sensible to have argued about that and starved to death? Wouldn't that have been secondary? But that's what we do sometimes when we factionalize around things that are far down from the top of the list in importance. And we think that they're big issues. It's the way we tend to function. Fifth, we concern ourselves about who's going to be the greatest or who's going to get the credit or who will get the perks of the job or the breaks or the special privileges. Self-interest is what they would call that. We might think, if we don't say, we might at least think, well, I've studied that subject more than that person, and they asked him to address that at the Teachers Institute instead of me. Or the board's all the time asking that person for his opinion, and then they tell me what he says, but they never ask me for my opinion. Tell him what I said. You know, those kinds of things. But does it really matter in the end? In the total package of teamwork, does it really matter whether we eat our hay off the ground or whether we eat it out of a brand new rack? We're still getting hay. Does it really matter which donkey gets the credit for seeing the haystacks first? You know, they're going to get fed. We can learn so much from these donkeys. Sixthly, we talk to others about problems with people on our team instead of talking to the people on the team that are concerned, who are definitely connected to the issue. Teachers maybe talk to other teachers about student problems, and there's a place that is a place for it, but not just any place. Teachers tend to talk to other teachers instead of going to the parents who have teamed up with them to give this child an education. Or parents talk to other parents about difficulties with the teacher instead of first approaching the teacher. Or parents talk to board members about a teacher instead of going to the teacher. Now, of course, if the teacher has been approached and has not been workable, or if the differences couldn't be worked out or the parents were too demanding or something, well, then of course the board needs to come on board. But we too often talk to somebody that's not going to be so hard to relate to, we think. And that undermines teamwork. Next, another thing we tend to do we make assumptions about other people's motives. If you have your Bible, I'm going to look at a few verses in 1 Timothy 6. This passage relates to a teamwork problem between master and servant. I'm going to read the first five verses. Let as many servants as are under the yoke count their own masters worthy of all honor, that the name of God and his doctrine be not blasphemed. And they that have believing masters, let them not despise them because they are brethren, but rather do them service because they are faithful and beloved, partakers of the benefit. These things teach and exhort. If any man teach otherwise, and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but doting about questions and strifes of words, whereof cometh envy, strife, railings, evil surmisings, perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds, and destitute of the truth, supposing the gain is godliness, from such withdraw thyself. After Paul gave directions on how servants should promote the team, should promote teamwork by right actions and right attitudes, then Paul tells what is true about anyone that teaches otherwise. In verse 4, he says pride would be his problem, and that from his activities come evil surmisings, for one thing. In other words, he'll start to suspect other people of things he does not know to be true. And whenever we do it, the same thing is wrong with us. we are proud, thinking too much of our own understanding of things. We think we have it figured out. Another item that I have on this list of what we do or are that can undermine teamwork in general, whether it's school or otherwise, we do subtle or political-type maneuverings to make a difference in something instead of working forthrightly. I heard a story once about a member of another church group. In thinking back, I think it was a Brethren group. Anyhow, in this group, there was a brother that wore a white hat when the more acceptable practice for the group was a black one. So a brother went to the white hat man and said, if I bought you a black hat, would you wear it? And I wish I knew more of details of the story. But when I heard that story, it made a deep impression on me. That was so sweet of him. Personal expenditure. He offered an expenditure and asked it in question form. Would you wear it? That's not coercion. That's not political. That's not backbiting or anything. That's just plain self-sacrifice. So beautiful. It's how it should be. But sometimes we stoop to maneuvering when our motives are not wholesome or our attitudes may not be wholesome. We just can't come out and say why we want it this way, but or why we're doing what we're doing, so we maneuver. I'll tell you a story that illustrates some maneuverings that occurred decades ago. There was a certain Mennonite conference in which the conference secretary resigned. And the secretary that resigned had been from the one end of the conference where there was a grouping of liberal people. And the moderator of the conference was from another end of the conference where it was more conservative, in that era at least. And the elderly moderator of the conference had a grandson in the ministry, also in the conservative end, and he wanted his grandson to be the new secretary. Now, he wouldn't have said that probably to anybody. He hoped that if he nominated his grandson, and then if the men from the liberal end of the conference would say they had a bigger end of the conference, if they would maybe nominate two people, then that would split the liberal vote and give his grandson a chance of getting elected. So when the election was held, he nominated his grandson. But the men from the liberal end of the conference had learned that moderator's style. And so as soon as a brother from the liberal end had nominated one person, another man from the liberal end moved that the nomination cease, and another brother seconded it. And from that part of the conference, and so the slate looked as if it was just going to contain the moderator's grandson and one other man, and there were more people from the liberal end. And it didn't look very good to the moderator, so I don't know the details, but he said something about this being a pretty important work, and yet he couldn't get it stopped. So when he asked who all was in favor of the nomination ceasing, well, the liberal end members were more in number, and they outnumbered the conservative end, and the motion carried, and the voting took place, and the grandson and his grandfather lost the election. The brother who told me the story said that the moderator sure made a fool of himself that day. We always do when we act like that. We might not lose the election, but we will go down with some folly attached to our name when we maneuver. Somebody, sooner or later, will see through it. If not in time, of course, God knows. Now, I'd like to think of some things that are more closely related to school in particular. How we might be guilty or tempted to undermine collective work, together each achieving more when we are in school work. The pulling, the scraping, the pawing, the kicking can actually happen in ways that are very quiet and not at all, doesn't make us look at all contorted like those donkeys. At least in our sight, but in God's sight, we might be rather out of shape. One example, one way I would give that we might be guilty of doing that in school life is to practice the life of a recluse. Do you know what a recluse is? Someone that recludes, withdraws from the general circulation in society. Each of our lives exerts an influence. And my being a faculty member, your being a faculty member, gives the faculty a different tone, a different sound, than someone else's presence would. It just will be different. And so each of our presences on a faculty will, it adds something to the total sound that the faculty produces. So if I decide to be a recluse and go into a barrel and close the lid and just speak out through the bunghole, that significantly alters my contribution to the sound of the group. And my strange manner of contributing is going to cause suspicion and mistrust to grow in other people. It's a kind of pulling on the rope my way. I'm going to be different from you so that you all look at me and wonder why. I'm expressing dissatisfaction with what is going on outside my barrel. Now that's different from being reserved or shy. Here are some things we could ask ourselves. After school is finished for the day, do I work in my classroom with my door shut? Do I ever visit with other teachers after school? Do I ever make suggestions of sharing activities such as swapping devotional periods? When we pass in the hall in the morning before school, do I say hello, good morning, exchange a few pleasantries? Do I ever invite fellow faculty members to my home? If you can say yes for the ones that were good and no for the ones that weren't, well, that can give you a little bit of an index. Another thing we can do to undermine teamwork in school is to enjoy casting dissenting votes and to withhold support from group projects. I don't know what books you read, but there are some children's books that have some excellent illustrations of that. Are any of you familiar with the book by Robert McCloskey titled Lentil? Oh, good. Well, then you know who I mean by Old Sneep. In that book, a local hero was returning to town, and Old Sneep said, I went to school with him. He didn't want to give him any recognition just because he came back to town and was a army officer, I think. And so he went up on sat on the roof and noisily slurped away at a lemon. And the reason he did it was so that, and he made enough noise doing it, that people on the street looked up, and to see someone sucking on a lemon was almost more than their mouths could handle, and so their lips puckered, and they couldn't play music with their instruments the way they were supposed to welcome this famous man home. And he was the only one in town acting like that. And probably a lot of you are familiar with Old Eeyore in Winnie the Pooh. Once Al invited Eeyore, he told Eeyore that Christopher Robin was giving a party, and Eeyore said, very interesting. I suppose he was sending down the odd bits, which got trodden on. Kind and thoughtful. Not at all, don't mention it. And after they'd convinced him that he was invited, he said, ah, a mistake, no doubt, but still, I shall come, and don't blame me if it rains. And that's going to a donkey again for a little bit of advice. To not be sour. Sour is the word. But when we sort of enjoy the dissenting role and the withholding of support, you know, maybe, I don't know if faculties don't operate the same way, but I've taught in small schools where there were hardly enough teachers to have a worthwhile faculty meeting, and I'm currently teaching in a larger school, but let's suppose you do have a faculty meeting and there are 8-9 people sitting around the table and you're discussing something. Maybe you're going to discuss whether you should allow certain recess activities, so you put it to a vote and you just think it's invading your own turf. You ought to be able to decide whether you're going to do this or that at recess. And so you could handle it two ways. You could sit sourly as it's discussed and And as you sense the group leaning toward one way, well, you just gloat how you're going to have at least one vote the other way, so everybody knows it wasn't unanimous. And then you leave the meeting promptly and don't talk to anybody. Or you could speak up and respectfully say how you think about it. You can vote your preference and cheerfully submit when the vote goes the other way, instead of going up on the roof and sucking a lemon. A third thing that can come up in school life is if we complain to the board about petty irritants in faculty members. Is there anyone that has no idea what I mean by a petty irritant? Something that irritates you in another person. Little, yes, but you just can't get over it. Maybe you have a co-teacher that sings so loudly that it interferes with what you're doing during that same time. Well, he's your teammate. Go talk to him. See what you can work out about it. Don't make an issue to bother the school board with it when you haven't even tried to take the team approach. The fourth way that this could come to school life, undermining of teamwork, is when we surrender our personal tastes and our personal techniques reluctantly when the board asks. And I'm going to give you two examples from my life. If I had 9th and 10th grade students in music class work on good enunciation habits while they were singing in front of a mirror. I brought in a big mirror for them to park in front of, and they were to watch their mouths as they sang. Well, a board member spoke to me about it. He understood and supported my interest in good singing technique. But it seems there were some people who were thinking this might engender the wrong attitude in students, you know, becoming too proud of their performance or something. And I could understand their viewpoint. After all, they couldn't be there all the time to see whether I was handling it acceptably or not. They just heard about it. And the best thing was just to give in and work at it in other ways. But if I had argued and kept doing it another class or two, or that kind of thing, that's not teamwork. Another example, when I began teaching in a school one time, and the board member that was speaking to me, sort of by way of introduction to the work, told me that I was to get board approval for any of the storybooks that I read to the students at lunchtime. Well, I had always made that decision before at the school where I taught, and I felt a little miffed about this. But there was a reason for their policy. They had had a problem with a teacher before me who read Oliver Twist to his students, and they weren't mature enough to handle some of the material in that book, and it was hard on their nerves. And so they had a valid reason for their ruling. I was new to the school. They didn't know if I would do the same thing or not. And I think eventually they dropped that requirement for me, but it's been so many years I forget sort of how that went. But that's the kind of thing. We have personal tastes, techniques, and here somebody tells us that, no, you may not do it that way. A fifth thing that comes into school life sometimes that can undermine teamwork is related to one that I mentioned already before, so I'll just go across it briefly, but to not participate in group discussions. I should have included that with another one. But in our school, I guess it comes to my mind partly, came to my mind partly as a point, because at our school, we have all the students exit the same set of double doors. And so the day always ends up with the teachers there at the same doors together. And this began before I was teaching in this school, but we often linger a few minutes, and sometimes it turns into more like a half hour while we visit. Well, not everybody says a lot. Some of the talkative ones say more, and some of the ones say less or don't talk at all. But in general, everybody that's there listens and smiles along and acts enjoying of this time. And I've been glad for the spirit that shows, because if somebody would just routinely say nothing or moodily stay a little bit and then walk off alone and do it every day, that breaks down teamwork. Another way we can undermine teamwork is to act as if we're the authority on certain things. Probably If you have the privilege of teaching with at least two or three other teachers, you'll find out that somebody in your school is maybe a math pro, or maybe a artistically inclined individual, or the biology expert, or the language answer key, or whatever. But that's a recognition that others ought to give him. He shouldn't throw his weight around as if, well, since I am good at this, this is how it is. If he always knows the answers when a discussion comes up in his pet field, he shouldn't just announce his verdict as if, and say, of course, coming from me, you ought to just take that as the final word. No. He's likely going to be slightly mistaken sometimes. And it's not good to act as if we are the authority, really, on any subject. The last one that I would mention is another way, and certainly I'm sure the list isn't exhausted yet, but we undermine teamwork when we harp on incorrect things in our fellow faculty members. Now, this is not just something that's an irritant, not just an idiosyncrasy, but something that the faculty member is actually incorrect about. And here's another story I'll give you from my life. Maybe you would have had better stories for some of these if I had known them, but I'll give you ones that I knew. Language has been one of my areas of study over the years and areas of interest. I keep collections of quotes and language misuse and interesting language-related articles, and I have many literature and language-related books. And I tend to pick up rather speedily language misuse and language mispronunciation. I think I can do it not quite automatically, but it's just like some of you can do some other things almost without trying. Well, there are some other brethren on our faculty that have done some editing and have taught long enough to also have some pretty good proficiency at language. So sometimes we correct each other. But sometimes it takes me a while to do it personally, and sometimes I just don't do it. But when I was the principal, I sometimes would give language quizzes to the faculty. Especially I did that during one year. In faculty meeting, we sometimes had language quizzes, and then I could address a language problem that I knew existed sort of impersonally. You know, give everybody a quiz and include a point on the quiz. Well, on one pronunciation quiz, I purposefully included a word that one of the faculty members kept misusing. He was a very knowledgeable faculty member and forceful enough that I guess I was half scared to confront him about it, so I put it on the quiz. The word was interest, I-N-T-E-R-E-S-T. He would always say interest. And I was too something or other to confront him personally. Well, on this quiz, the teachers, I fixed up the quiz in multiple choice form, and they were to select the pronunciation that was correct. And I had put the interest pronunciation that this fellow teacher kept using as one of the possible choices. And don't you know? We were checking over it, and we came to this word. And there was a bit of hesitancy before anyone ventured an answer. But then this teacher that misquoted it spoke up and said, well, for sure it isn't this one. And he named the very pronunciation he always said. He said, well, for sure it isn't interest. Or for sure it isn't that one. And he was choosing interest. I was beat. Well, time went on and he kept saying interest. And I kept getting bothered. And we had so many places for interest in a school setting. At our school, each winter, we have a set of six classes for which the students may... We offer them a panel of maybe 10 or 12 classes that they may select from, of the craft, hobby, extracurricular activity type of thing, in which they have special interest. And we call them special interest classes But, of course, to this person, they were special interest. So, one day I went to him and said, while we're in this special interest season, might be a good time to mention it. Did you know that you reversed the sounds in the word interest? Well, no, he didn't. In fact, he said he knew that was one way not to say it. He was unaware that he was saying it. I thought that was a bit amazing, but I didn't make much over it. And I was glad to have it out in the open. Anyhow, guess what? I thought I detected a bit of effort a time or so after I talked to him that he was trying to say it differently. But to this day, he still usually says interest. Now, he knows language. And he can correct me on a grammatical rule. And he cares about it. But the way his mind functions, you would enjoy seeing his mind functioning. He'll be trying to recollect something and he'll stand there and his head will jerk a little bit as it's reeling its way to the top. And then he'll come off with something. And he can recall more stuff than I have forgotten. He is a walking reference. But his mind is so full and organized in such a way that it requires, I guess it requires him to focus so mightily on what he is saying and to get his thoughts organized that he doesn't have capacity left to care about the details on what he's saying. Anyhow, as a team member, what should I do? Keep harping at him? Get back next special interest season and say, it's still interest. I won't gain anything if I do. He has a great mind in many ways. He outdoes me in lots of things. But he operates strongly on habit. He always seats one grade on one side of the room and the other grade on the other side of the room. And he keeps a name list of his students on the podium in front of him all year. You know, if he were to suddenly have the one grade on the other side, that would confuse things too badly. Well, that's just one of his limitations. But I need to reckon with that limitation charitably and not harp on it and make fun of it. I'm on the West Coast, so I hope it doesn't filter back. Just as I'm glad he doesn't capitalize on my inability to remember. He doesn't say to me, don't you remember anything you read? So I should keep on using my influence to promote careful speech, but not disrespect somebody on the team who's doing all he can do. I'd like to close with a poem again. This one I've titled, Not a Team. If deep, remember we're talking about undermining. If deep within my mind's mind of human interworking, I keep a fire of independence, pride, or vengeance lurking, and if I fan the fire with frequent puffs of grievance stale, and focus on peculiarities and gossip's tale, then I am like a donkey pulling wildly on a rope, and working hard to get my way without a thread of hope of ever getting to my hay, nor likely will the other, who's pulling hard the other way, nor acting like my brother. When such absurd behavior governs, never will the tether be but a mockery or sham as we raise dust together.